The views and opinions expressed by hosts and guests on Patriots with Grit do not necessarily reflect those of Patriots with Grit LLC, its founders, and owners.
Get ready for truth bombs and guidance from conservative leaders and entrepreneurs, from God-fearing, freedom-loving, truth-telling, patriotic Americans. Welcome to Patriots with Grit. Now let's jump into today's episode with your host, Darren Ross.
Well, hey, PWG family, welcome to another great episode here today. Randy, we have a great guest lined up today. Somebody that is, he's a neighbor of ours, more or less, right?
Yeah, neighbor to the north.
Neighbor to the north. He's coming from the great state of Iowa. And I will say, Randy, in talking with him, I think we'll all have to believe today that we need leaders in states and in positions of politics or whatever that have character, honesty, integrity, morals, and ethics. And I truly believe our guest today has all that. What do you think?
Well, he's considered a political outsider, which I truly support, because we don't need politicians. We need grassroots people that understand the people at the grassroots level and where our rights are being degraded from us and taken and stolen. And I think this guy's got some very good points, and we'll see where he goes in his candidacy for governor.
He's grounded in Christian principles as well as freedom and history. It's time to get our great guest on here. He's running for the governor of Iowa, Mr. Brad Sherman. Well, hey there, Brad Sherman. It's awesome to have you on here today as a guest with Patriots with Grit. You're currently in the race for the governor of Iowa. And Randy, I don't think we've had many gubernatorial candidates on this show, have we?
No, none.
And especially those from the bordering states.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, Brad, you are considered by a lot of people as a political outsider. And I like that, Randy.
I do too.
Anybody that can be far away from the political machine is a friend of mine. So let's jump into this show real quick. I mean, you have a really good past. You've done a lot of pastoral work. You've written some articles, some books. You've been involved with construction, real estate, and the commercial, residential. You have a lot of entrepreneurial as well as theological background and backbone. Let's talk about why you would want to leave the good life for a life of politics, because that doesn't add up to me, Randy. This guy seems too good and too just centered to be in the political race.
Well, and Brad, that's what we want to know is, man, you know what you're in for. I hope you know what you're in for, because there's some rigors there, but what made you jump into this?
Well, first off, thanks for having me on. It's a real pleasure. And if you don't have very many governor candidates on, then I'm honored to be one of that elite group. So thank you again.
You're in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I've been a pastor for 45 years. Well, 46 years. My wife and I moved to Iowa City from Southeast Missouri, actually. I grew up in Southeast Missouri. And I grew up operating heavy equipment, dozers and drag lines. And my dad had a excavating business, and so we did a lot of farm drainage work. And so I always make a joke about that, saying, you know, so I literally have swamp draining experience, because we drained a lot of, you know, drained the water off.
That's what we need, man. We need more of those.
Yeah. So but I do believe in political swamp draining as well. But we went into ministry training, and then we went to Iowa City. We moved to Iowa City, and in 1981 we started a church there, reaching out to university students, and we saw the indoctrination that was taking place, which was undermining the foundations of our freedom, left-wing stuff all the time. We helped a lot of young people navigate that minefield so that they came out, you know, still loving America and loving God, you know, and so that was a big part. But that's what I think really launched me into trying to be involved in politics. I never really thought I would run for public office at all. I thought my lane would be to try to educate people. I mean, I've been involved for years and you know, a long time, you know, in trying to educate people about the founding principles of America, what this nation was founded on, how do we preserve those freedoms, et cetera. And then in 2022, I ran for state house. But before that, I mean, I was a county chair. I led caucuses here in Iowa. I've led the county conventions. I've been delegate all the way to the national convention and served on the national platform committee as well. Been involved in pro-life work. I've done home building and real estate development as well, you know, during this time. So a broad range of experience. But I ran for state house in 22, won that race, and probably would have run again. But we had a daughter who passed away suddenly and unexpectedly in the middle of the term. So we made plans to move to a different district to be close to our grandkids. And, you know, I was willing to just give all this up. You know, it wasn't something that has ever been a huge ambition for me. But in the process of, you know, that whole thing, people started saying, well, if you're not running for House, you should run for governor. And of course, anybody can say that. So I didn't take it too seriously. Right. But when we started praying about it, then, boy, I mean, God confirmed it so many ways. It was undeniable to us. And so that's why we got into this. And so that's the short story, I guess.
So let's talk a little bit, Brad, about when you were in the state house as a state rep. What did you see in there kind of when you started pulling back the curtain?
Well, it was a good look under the hood, as they say. You know, you see how it works, how the sausage is made, how the bills are made, and the process, and you know, just the back and forth and the deals that are made. And, you know, sometimes making deals is just benign. You know, you got to give and take sometimes when you're trying to hammer out legislation. I get that. But I also saw people that were willing to compromise their principles, and there's rarely a strong force in the atmosphere, if you want to call it that, that try to get people start feeling pretty important about themselves, you know, and they want to get reelected. And there's a feeling of superiority or power that's easy to feel when you're there. So pretty soon getting elected again becomes top priority.
We've seen just down here in our state, we've supported some people that we thought were going to be the big winner for us, and they've got into office and they've completely went against what they told us they were going to do.
Pretty much done nothing.
Done nothing. Bought into the machine, and it's so disappointing because we really thought we had somebody. And so with that, you know, you're going into this situation. It is truly a machine. I think there's a lot of corruption in it, but you know better than we do how it functions. And to the public, it doesn't seem like it functions for the people. So
yeah, one of the promises I've been making, I've got four that I always give people toward the end of my stump speech. But one of them is I will not be bought. Government is not for sale. And there's one individual who I'm not even sure who it was, but the point is, he was asked one time, a wealthy guy, if he was going to run for governor, and his response was, no, I don't think I will run for governor because it's easier to buy a governor than to run for governor. And so you get these big, you know, that's pretty sad, but that's just unfortunate. That's how people think sometimes. And then when you watch all the different things that go on, and things just don't add up, and you can only come to the conclusion that somebody owes somebody a favor for some reason. And that's the way things work. So that's the kind of politics that I don't like. It's not the kind of governor I'll be. You know, my wife and I prayed about this. We didn't ask any donor or any organization, will you get behind us if we choose to run for governor? We asked God alone. And after we knew that that was his direction, then we started asking people to get behind us. And we've had some very wonderful people and donors get behind us. So that's the way it works. But I don't owe favors. And that's, you know, I owe gratitude to a lot of people who have helped out with some wonderful volunteers and donors. But this is about doing the right thing for the people.
So what do you see, Brad, today? As you've been in this now for a little while, what do you see as your biggest challenges?
Well, you know, I mean, once elected,
is that what you're now talking about? And once elected,
yeah.
Let's do it in two phases.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, right now we've been working hard. We're the first people to get into this race. I was the first candidate to get in the race, and the only one that got in the race before the incumbent decided not to run. And so, and that speaks to my conviction and, you know, leadership. I think everybody else got in the race when the incumbent said she wasn't going to run. But the challenge is, and so we've been to 300 and I'm going to count this one here, this interview as well as a meeting. So that would make 393.
Wow.
Events, meetings we've been to, and just about every one of them, we hang around to the last person and talk to people and find out what's on their hearts, and you know, and we find out what's in their minds, and then we often learn things as well that we need to know. So working hard, that's been the challenge, and of course raising funds, because we don't get funds from all the big donors and corporate money than PACs and all these people that expect certain, favors. We haven't got money from them. So raising funds has been a big challenge, but we've done pretty well. We've just spent over $100,000 on ads here for the last 2 weeks. So we're getting our name out there. But I think that's the biggest challenge in the campaign is just the sticking with it and being getting some sleep, I think, is probably one of the biggest challenges.
I would think so.
Well, you have several talking points. I know, Randy, you and I kind of came up with some of them. One of the things I wanted to bring up, Brad, is one of your key things, kind of like the backbone that you're running on, is restoring the foundations of freedom. Let's talk a little bit about that topic and kind of what you see going forward with that.
Yeah, I mentioned moving to Iowa City in 1981, and so we've been noticing that, and I've written books, I've done seminars all around the state, I put together these PowerPoint presentations, and I've traveled around the state, meeting with any group that would meet. I've done that in other states as well around the Midwest to some degree, just to try to teach people because, George Mason, who is known by many as the father of the Bill of Rights, he said if free people don't examine their liberties and how they were obtained, they risk losing these rights. And so my take on that is that if we don't know how government is supposed to work, we won't know when it's not working. And that's when our freedoms can be taken away. And by the time we realize it, it's too late. And so, I actually, I made that statement a while back, a couple of weeks back in Cedar Rapids at a meeting. And a young lady came to me afterwards and said, you know, what you just said, I've experienced exactly what you're talking about. She said, my family and I loaded everything we had in a vehicle and we came to America, we fled here from Canada. And she said, in her words, Canada has become a communist nation. You can be in jail for disagreeing with the government. And she said, we never thought that our freedoms could be taken away. We just took it for granted. This is just Canada. It's not going to happen. She said, but then by the time we saw that it was happening, it was too late. And they had to leave because, their money had been frozen, all kinds of things had happened to them, because they're conservatives and they don't agree with what's going on in the government. So that's what restoring the foundations of freedom is about. And that's my mantra, if you want to call it that. I don't like that term very much. But anyway, the point is that we have to teach people where our freedoms came from. And one of the most foundational principles where our freedoms come from is found in the Declaration of Independence. And of course, this is a great time to talk about that because this is our 250th anniversary. The birth certificate of our nation is the Declaration of Independence. And, it says, and, we're familiar with these words, says we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. And I always like to emphasize created equal. And they're endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights. And among these rights are life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. And that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. So our rights don't come from government. So many people in government get this idea somehow that their rights are supposed to, they give people rights. Well, government doesn't. That's not the job or the purpose of government. Rights come from God. Says it right in the founding of our nation. And the purpose of government then is to protect the rights that God gives us. And boy, if that foundational principle was laid down in the heart of every school child, every legislator, every adult, if that was ingrained in our thinking, that alone could be transformative, to our culture. So that's one of the key foundations. And then, of course, I could, we can go into life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. And, pursuit of happiness is largely about property rights. And so there's so many issues that connect to all those topics.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
That was next on the list right here, Brad.
But when I saw this, the first thing I thought of is the erosion of our freedoms when the overlords of the county zoning, the commissions, you can no longer put a shed on your 5 acres out in the middle of nowhere because they say so.
Well, I got to jump in here. I went through this back in 2000, 2001, we had a business located on our farm in a really nice Morton building, you know, very profitable, making a lot of money. County came in, oh, you're not zoned commercial. So we ended up moving to a local city, built a large manufacturing facility, and it was never the same. It just didn't have the feel, the vibe. And I hated it the 16 years we were there. But just recently, Brad, so my daughter and her husband live in, they live on land. They have like 9 acres in the city limits of Liberty, Missouri, which is, you know where Liberty is. It's right outside of Kansas City. So it's kind of like living in the country, but yet you're under the umbrella of the city. So in 2021, they bought the 9 acres, old house there. We all went and took it down to the studs. Literally took it down to the studs, wood, dirt floor underneath, spent a year and a half rebuilding that house. So my son-in-law's father helped do all the construction. I helped do the demo work because you wouldn't want me doing the construction by any means. And built a nice 2,400 square foot building out back. The Amish came in and built the building. So now my daughter and son-in-law are they just had our second granddaughter. So they need to obviously be looking at building a bigger house. So they're wanting to take this 700 square foot house they live in now, which looks like you've been there.
Brand new.
It literally looks like it could be in a magazine for show homes. It's so nice. 700 square feet could make a perfect Airbnb, but nope, you can't do that. You can't build your new house here next to your new barn that you have when you have your 700 square foot house here. So the little house has to go. It's got to go bye-bye, got to demo it. And it just sets so wrong with me that these planning and zoning goons, and in Liberty, I do believe they follow the county's planning and zoning. And so they built a 2,400 square foot building. Then about a year and a half ago, the new zoning laws came out that, oh, we're changing this now. So your outbuilding can be no larger than your house. So had they waited another year, year and a half, to build their outbuilding, they could have only built it 700 square feet, which for most people, why even build a building anyway? You know, you can't get more than one car in there. So it just seems to me like all these people at these county, like Randy said, county planning and zoning, they've just lost their mind when it comes to control. And so I don't know if it's that bad in Iowa. We have friends that live in northern Missouri and there's no zoning. I talked to them last Friday night at an event. Literally, no zoning, no rules and regulations for septic, no nothing. It's just in Grundy County, Missouri. Basically, it's the wild, wild west up there. You just come in and do whatever you want to do. So how do you view this going in as governor to kind of put the lid on what some of these planning and zoning and county officials are doing?
Well, yeah, it's a big deal. I mean, the county I live in right now has a very relaxed, we don't have zoning. I moved out of Iowa City or in Johnson County and did a real estate development out here in Iowa County. And, you know, they have no zoning. And so I didn't have to get a permit to build a house or anything. I have a 5-acre lot and built myself a house. Now, there were some things I had to do. They had just passed a new law that if you're not under a jurisdiction to oversee your electrical, then you have to actually have the state guy come and inspect it. And that was pretty non-eventful. So we got the electrical inspected and we did have to get a septic permit, but that was the only two things we did. So it's fairly relaxed here. And there are several counties, I think, still in Iowa that are that way. It seems like every time you get a bigger city, the more restrictive it gets. Mm-hmm. So, but here's my philosophy. I think these things need to be local control. Most of the time when you try to fix something from for us it would be the capital in Des Moines, when you fix it from Des Moines, it's a one size fits all, and it doesn't work because one size doesn't fit everybody else. Now, some of these, but I hear what you're saying. Some of these zoning and planning commissions, their rules are, it's like these guys must just get a real charge out of telling people what to do, because some of the rules they come up with is just ridiculous. And so I think local people, have to decide whether they want to put up with that or not. And that's where I, And that gets down to property taxes as well. I think the more transparent government is, the more likely we are to see people vote the right kind of people in. But anyway, that's my general feeling on it.
How are you going to approach the property tax issue? Because I think you're probably well aware that all the taxation that's happening to the general public, the system that's in place is outpacing their ability to survive.
Well, I think the first thing, I think I mentioned just now, is transparency. Mm-hmm. We need absolute transparency in how money is being spent and how it's passed around. I know when I got to the legislature, one of the craziest things I saw was trying to understand how school funding works and county funding. I mean, it is the most complicated system you can imagine, with all the different levies and silos and what have you that for funding. But we have a young lady running for state auditor here now, who is actually from my county, and she's currently a county supervisor. And she's got a plan to put the state on a uniform, I guess you'd say, software system, so that all the different, so it can be watched over. So if you had a real auditor, you know, you probably wouldn't need DOGE, you know, or any of those types of things.
Right.
So I'm excited about her ideas. She does believe in local control, but at the same time, we have government oversight, because people are not angels and they do bad things. They have to be watched over. So there's another answer to that we could get into, called self-government. But I think transparency is a big thing for that. It's a Band-Aid for the problem. But I think one of the biggest things that we also need to do is look at how are we going to get our population growing again. Here in Iowa, we have a very low population growth, and a lot of people leave the state, you know, when they want better jobs. We're an ag state, and a lot of the small farms are now being gobbled up by big corporate entities.
Yes, it is.
And they're controlled by big corporations, a couple layers up, you know, in terms of who owns what. So those are some things that really need to be looked into to see if the laws are actually being followed. Because we have laws in Iowa against against corporations owning too much farmland, and we have laws against foreign entities owning farmland, but they still might be controlled by this company or that company, even though their name's not on the title. So there's a lot to look into there, but this is all property tax issue. I mean, we know we have to have certain public services. We have to have roads and bridges, and you know, we need our educational systems, but once we get the transparency in place, I think it's going to make some big changes. I heard about one school superintendent that was making $400,000 a year. And to me, that's just the teachers, you know, and the administrative staff in our school systems has just skyrocketed.
I was going to ask you, at the larger schools, how many assistant principals would they have?
Well, I don't know, but I've seen the chart, and the chart that showed the growth of students was just a slight incline. The chart and the line graph that showed the increase in teachers was almost parallel, slight incline.
Right.
The increase of administrators went like a hockey stick.
There you go.
And so, you know, something's wrong here. This one superintendent was making a big salary like that, and I think it was the same one, not sure. Also had a $400 a month clothing budget. So what school? Yeah, a clothing budget. So what school board approved that? I think if the general public knew that, they would vote for a different school board.
Wow.
Sounds like those school board members wore their masks too long, Randy.
Well, so I want to tag on this a little bit more, because, and this is going to bridge into some other things. What we're seeing a mass wave of these data centers. Number one, they're taking up farmland. And I don't understand the whole backdoor process of this. There's a whole lot of stuff we don't understand and don't want to get into. But the point is, massive tax breaks to get these data centers into your state. And then if they're in like municipalities, then it looks like that utilities are being having to be upgraded and rates are going up. And
well, I want to jump in here.
And people are being their tax money is basically being leveraged for a corporate interest.
Well, I want to jump in here. I mentioned Liberty, Missouri a while ago, which was like 10 minutes from where we are right now. They're putting in $1.4 billion data center here real soon. And apparently they have given them a $202 million tax abatement over
20 years,
give or take. I have a problem with that, Brad. When you have Joe's Tire Shop or Bill's Used Cars, if they want to build a new facility or a new shop, my impression is probably because we built our manufacturing facility. We didn't see any tax abatements, although we were promised some by the city manager of Excelsior Springs, Missouri, which never came to fruition. And we were promised the world, but it never happened. So how do you view this when these companies are getting tens of millions of dollars in abatements?
But, tens? Hundreds?
Well, it depends on the size of the data center.
Right.
But yet, you know, the local small business owner, you know, he's out there saddled with all the burden of paying all of his and probably a lot of theirs as well. And to throw on top of this, like I told Randy, it's not to be a conspiracy theorist, but you know, over the last 6 years, I've been pretty accurate on everything. But it's look what our utility bills have done in the last 2 or 3 years. Look what our real estate taxes have done over the last 2 or 3 years. Is that possibility? Is there a possibility of some of those funds are being used to fund some of these data centers to increase and improve the infrastructure for utilities, electric, water? Are we as consumers funding part of that, but we just don't know where it's going?
Yeah. Well, that's a big issue here. I get this question a lot, especially lately, about the data centers. You know, I think the whole idea of data and AI, you know, I mean, this is where the world's headed. I don't know that there's much we can do about it, but I am very aware of the tax breaks. Now, I did a little bit of research here in Iowa and found out, I think we have 105 different data centers. Some of them are smaller, but we got some very huge ones too. We've got Google, we got, you know, Meta.
We've got a bunch of them out there in off I-80. I'm trying to think what that is. Not Ankeny. Out there toward Iowa City.
Yeah. So we've got some big ones, and from what I've gathered, some of them have permanent tax breaks. And not only on their property taxes, but also on the sales tax when they buy equipment to put in the data centers.
Or use tax. We have use tax in Missouri.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know if we have a use tax here, but I don't think, but it's just another form of tax that, and different states put different names on it.
So, why would these multi-billion dollar companies be getting all that, but yet the local guy doesn't? And here's my question, Brad, to add on to that. What are they generating? Are they generating sales? I mean, are they selling data, procuring data, trading data? I mean, how is that
beneficial
data center? What's the service or the product coming out of the back end of that thing? And how is it generating anything for the state? It seems like the state's just giving what they want, but yet what are they getting in return?
I couldn't give anything a higher endorsement.
I would be remiss had I not include Cardio Miracle on my very short list of secrets.
It's the real deal. It's a real product. It's not another supplement.
I'm operating about 6 to 8 hours, and I've noticed that being on this Cardio Miracle has made a huge difference.
Since I started taking Cardio Miracle, about 8 months into it, the benefits have been fantastic.
You know, if I get hungry, then I just have a Cardio Miracle.
I encourage you to take this seriously because it's not only about your athletic performance, it's about the general health long term.
Not only is it safe, but it's necessary to take Cardio Miracle to stay well.
This let me sleep. It's filling up more energy, more get up and go. And it's all because of what this company does.
For me as a doctor, Cardio Miracle is a staple.
Cardio Miracle to me is hope in a glass.
Well, they don't get too many jobs, that's for sure, because there are a few. And the construction jobs are good, but they're temporary. And so I'm just saying that I don't believe the tax breaks ought to be permanent. Now, I understand the whole concept of doing incentives to get companies to come in if it's going to be a benefit to the community, but you know, there aren't that many jobs. Now, and then, of course, the power usage, and there's a big issue with the water it takes to cool them, and, you know, and I think these problems can be solved. But and that brings up one of the things I've been talking about now for 3 years and I've been very interested in, and that's establishing a network of SMRs around our state to you know, provide and become energy independent when it comes to electricity. SMRs, of course, are the small modular reactors. These things have there are new designs out there that are way, way safer than anything. The old ones were safe. I mean, we haven't had much trouble at all. But these things are safe. They don't need water for cooling. They burn the spent fuel from the old reactors. And they're built offsite. You haul them in, you set them up. A network of those would create a stable energy grid, and we wouldn't need wind. We wouldn't need solar. We wouldn't need to ruin our farmland with windmills and solar panels. You know, we can just have a good, stable system of electricity that needs no backup system. Wind and solar has to have a backup because wind doesn't blow all the time and sun doesn't shine all the time. So, you know, you have to have backup. So that's why energy prices don't seem to go down. At least that's part of the problem as I see it. And so these are some new ideas that I think I'd like to see us do. I know we have a nuclear energy task force now in our state that our current governor started. And they just got started. I don't think they've produced their first report yet, but I'm anxious to see what they're going to think about. So, because we've been doing this for decades on aircraft carriers and submarines, you know, a little power plant, and it just keeps running. So this is a big issue, and I think we have to solve these problems before these data centers keep going. We have to solve the energy problems. We have to solve the cooling problems. And then we got to make sure that they're not getting tax abatements that are crazy, because that's a big part of our tax, you know, tax issues in our state. If we were having revenue come in from these things, then maybe we could cut our taxes a little bit more.
So the other connecting thing here would be eminent domain. We're seeing stuff all over the country. If you're following stuff on social media, there's people getting their houses taken away from, not taken away. The utility companies are using their appraiser to appraise the house and say, here's the market value we're going to give you. They're lowballing them and saying, we're going to take these 13 houses out because we're going to put power lines through here. But the power lines are for the data centers.
We just saw one other day on social media where a mom and her daughter were doing a video, and it was a short video, and literally they were standing out in their backyard, nice, beautiful backyard, landscaped well, pool. Literally, it was going to come up right. It was going to take her pool out. I mean, literally, it was. And basically, you walk out her back door, her deck, and about 10 feet was going to be the fence for the power company coming through to divide their property from her property.
They're going to take that house is what they were going to do.
It doesn't seem in our family, we're a sixth generation farm family too, Brad. And about 12, 13 years ago, Evergy, which is a local utility, came in and took a whole bunch of our land and put in big, massive power structures, starting at the Missouri River, going all the way to Northeast Missouri. And it took out our ability to do center pivot irrigation systems. And we have several of them now. And, you know, the farms that they put these power lines in were ideal for center pivot, but can't ever do it anymore. So when they came in, they offered X amount of money, and, you know, we didn't settle. We fought them for 3 years. Finally, we went to a jury trial, which is our attorney said he's never really done many jury trials for eminent domain, but we were one of the few people that I grew up hard-headed enough and was raised by people that you just don't give in. And, it worked out very well for us and our family in the end with a jury trial for eminent domain. But most people, a lot of them, will just take what they're offered and maybe haggle a little bit, but not get near what they are, what's deserving to them, in my opinion.
So what's your position on eminent domain, and what do you see the problem?
Well, first off, the back to this SMRs, you talked about a company came in and took some of your land to put, or somebody's land to put, power lines in. Well, with these SMRs, a data center could install their own source of power with one of these things, and they wouldn't need to bring in their own power. Then they could sell it. If they had excess power, they could sell it on the grid or whatever. But so that's a big answer. But eminent domain, we're fighting that battle here in Iowa, not so much on electrical issues, but with the carbon capture pipeline. See, we have ethanol plants.
Right.
And if you see the big cloud going up in the sky from the ethanol plant, well, that's a cloud of carbon dioxide. And so they want to catch that carbon dioxide, condense it, put it in a pipeline, build a pipeline, send it up to North Dakota someplace, bury it in the ground where CO2 can't hurt anybody. Of course, the first thing I say is the premise is all wrong. CO2 doesn't hurt our atmosphere at all. You know, I had one of our top scientists told me that there's nothing humans can do to produce enough CO2 that's going to hurt our atmosphere, but he can't say that out loud or he would lose his job. He was almost whispering that to me in a coffee shop. You know, so I mean, I believe in clean air and clean water, but CO2 is not the problem.
Well, carbon dioxide is what plants use.
I know. I mean, and that makes plants grow faster, and the faster they grow, the more oxygen they produce. You know, I mean, this is just a simple thing, but that's the premise. You know, we've been told that CO2 is destroying our planet because it's a greenhouse gas and it's causing global warming. It's, oh, you know, the whole world's going to crash if we don't do something about it. Well, we find out that what they really wanted to do with this CO2 pipeline was to send it up to North Dakota where there's some oil wells that aren't producing much anymore, so they can inject it into the ground. It forces the oil out. So that's how they were going to bury it in the ground. And that was part of the scam. The other part of the scam is that there are huge tax credits, federal tax credits that come with capturing CO2. And it's so lucrative. And if it wasn't for these federal tax credits, nobody would be interested in building a CO2 pipeline. And then, of course, the other issue with the pipelines is how dangerous they are. The CO2 pipeline, it's not your average pipeline. Pipelines always have a danger of rupture for one reason or another, but they're not that high pressure. And if they blow up, or you know, it's a bad catastrophe for that spot. Or if a petroleum pipeline leaks, it makes a huge mess. But CO2 is about 2,500 to 3,000 pounds per square inch in a almost liquid state. It's called a supercritical state. And then if that ever ruptured, that cloud of carbon dioxide comes out. It will settle like a cloud in low-lying areas, and it smothers everything that breathes oxygen. And it's extremely dangerous. And they wanted to run this thing right past schools and homes and neighborhoods and what have you, these pipelines. So back to the eminent domain issue. They were wanted to use eminent domain to take people's property or force them to sell it to put in this carbon dioxide pipeline. Well, and it's a private company who's not a common carrier for a product that's not a public utility. So you don't ever get to use eminent domain for that.
No.
I mean, I always get a little chuckle when I say, but it's just that simple. But some things are so simple, you need a lawyer to misunderstand it.
that's good.
So that's the big eminent domain that we're fighting in our state. So that simply should not be happening. It looks to me like somebody has been bought and paid for to make this happen. You know, there's a utility commission that granted a permit for this, and they shouldn't have because it's not constitutional. Now, but then you can go back to the other issue of the, you know, eminent domain for things that are public utilities. Obviously, there's a time when you have to do that in some cases, but it also gets abused there as well. And that sounds like the situation you're talking about there, Darren. Mm-hmm.
I'm good. So with all of these issues, and I speak from somebody that would have no idea, if I was running for governor, I would not have any idea what day one would look like. And I don't want to put you in a corner, but what do you think it looks like the first couple weeks you're in there? You've got some things you really want to take care of. Are you going to have support from legislature, or I don't know, is it Republican strong or Democratic strong?
And we're Republican strong, and we're working to keep it that way. I don't think our party's perfect by any stretch,
right?
But it's so much better than the Democrat Party. It's not even funny, in my opinion.
Yeah.
but But at the same time, when corruption and greed gets in there and common sense leaves and people are more interested in being elected than doing the right thing, that's how we ended up. That's how we end up swinging back toward even worse. And then the progress that we have made gets undone. So that's what we're fighting, the battle we're fighting right now. We have a guy running for governor from the Democrat side who is pretending to be moderate, almost Republican in some cases, but is really very liberal, and he likes to shift, you know, around depending on who he's talking to. And so he's fooling a lot of people, and so that's the battle we're dealing with. But day one, I think this eminent domain thing is already a constitutional no-brainer. So I think an executive order might be in order if we can't get some other action going. We've had the bills. We've got a very good House. We have some good people in the Senate. The Senate leadership has blocked this, and the governor has blocked it in the past. And so I think if we have a new governor who will be on the right side of this issue, we might be able to get it to fixed through a legislative means instead of an executive order. But this has to be taken care of. That's a top priority. I think another top priority is human trafficking. We've got a problem with human trafficking.
In Iowa?
Yes. Some people say that we are third in the nation per capita for human trafficking. And it's not just sex trafficking. That's a big part of it. But it's also labor trafficking and people just being used that way. And so we have 65 agents in our state that oversee the casinos and gaming to make sure that they're done properly. But we don't have, I heard we had two, we only had two agents that were working on human trafficking. And I think I just heard recently that they were not funded. They were unfunded this past legislative session. So the funding was pulled. So this is just a horrible thing, you know, this human trafficking. We have to stop that. It's modern day slavery is all it is.
So Brad, being a political outsider, I'm guessing that you're not one of those people that's going to go in making $150,000 a year and you come out making like $3 or $4 million.
I don't foresee that at all.
So many of them you see, they go in and they were worth X, and when they come out, they're worth X times
10.
10x, you know, so it just doesn't make sense to me. And how all this can transpire and how they're bought and paid for so many years, and yet people just keep electing them in office. It's mind-boggling, Randy.
Yeah. I would hope anybody in your position that goes into a governor position never forgets the people, because I think that the people are forgotten and it becomes this machine that rules the people.
Well, that's absolutely true. You know, Thomas Jefferson said, inform the whole mass of the people. They are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberties. And he also, there's another quote I like to use. He said, I know of no safe depositor of the ultimate powers of a society, but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. And he said, this is the true corrective for abuse of constitutional power. So there's only one true way to preserve our liberty, or one good place to store liberty where it's safe, and that's in the people. But unfortunately, sometimes they're not enlightened enough to exercise that kind of control. So what's the remedy? Well, government likes to say, well, let me do it for you and we'll tell you what to do. Well, that's not the remedy. The remedy is to teach them, and that goes back to my foundational slogan, restoring the foundations of freedom. Teach them where our freedoms came from, get these principles in their hearts, give them the information and equip them to be able to reason from a proper foundation, and then they will protect our liberties. The people will do that. So that's why that's going to the root of the issue and making sure, because if people, you think about government, just seems to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And one of the reasons it gets bigger and bigger is because people are not doing the right thing. It gets back to that self-government issue I was talking about. If people are self-governed and do the right thing without being told or forced, then we don't need a big government to watch over them. They just do the right thing because they're good, moral people. But the less of that we have, the more government we have to keep chaos from ensuing in our culture. We need more police. We need more enforcement. We need, and it's getting to the point now where, you know, just like the human trafficking thing, it's a huge problem. And how much government would it take to track down every last problem and make sure it gets stamped out? It's a huge issue. But so we have to go to the root of this and start teaching people how to do the right thing and get back to the founding principles of our nation, because that's where our freedoms came from in the first place.
So, and I'm going to throw this out there. So the one thing that I would do is what you just said, I would do an executive order or something to get this put into the schools to have a patriotic, civics-based understanding our society type education, so that when kids get out of school, hopefully they'd be pumped up and they're not dumbed down.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, we need a lot more heads. I'm not the source of all knowledge, and I know that. You know, Mike Huckabee, I've got the good ideas, but putting all these things in place is important. You know, Mike Huckabee is a friend of mine. I helped him in his presidential campaign when he was traveling Iowa here. And I called him and told him I was going to run for governor. He knows a thing or two about that. He said, something that really stuck with me. He said, the most dangerous guy in the room is the guy who doesn't know that he doesn't know. And so, you know, nobody knows everything.
Right.
And so there are, and I know people who have given a lot of thought already into this. So we've got a big head start on it. But rebuilding and revamping our educational system, I don't think can be done with an executive order. I think we need a good director of education. Sure. We need some good heads together, put together a new curriculum. And we've already been chipping away at some of the woke ideology that's been going through our schools. But this is a problem that's just developed over decades and decades. And so now we're going to have to step in and do something about it, because it's destroying our nation. You know, John Adams said, I said, our Constitution is made for a moral and a religious people and is wholly inadequate for the government of any other. So, I see absolutely nothing wrong with teaching morality and that religion has a place in our lives. I don't see anything wrong with teaching that in our public schools. Now, certainly we don't want to force people into Christianity or any religion. If we did that, it wouldn't be Christianity anymore. But somebody's values will shape public policy. That's just a fact. And there's no such thing as neutrality. In fact, if we sit down and try to embrace neutrality and be quiet, then that all that does is open the door for somebody else to advance their values. And that's what we've been seeing for decades. So we can't be afraid or ashamed anymore. This nation was founded on Christian principles, you know, and that's just the way it is. So we have to have a value system and I believe those principles provide the most freedom for everybody, whether they become Christians or not. It's a different issue, but it provides the most freedom for everybody, because somebody's value system has to shape the public policy.
Brad, do you think it's gotten a lot worse in the last 6 years since COVID?
Well, COVID was horrible. That's another big issue. We shut down our state. It crippled our economy. You know, and so many people were, I mean, they had the Gestapo's chasing me. I walked into a store and they chase you down for not wearing a mask, for crying out loud, you know, It was horrible what happened. You know, that was tyranny. Yeah. You know, doctors were threatened with the loss of their medical license if they didn't take a shot, or threatened with being fired. One, if you prescribed ivermectin and tried something that would, a very safe drug, and they try, but it wasn't what Anthony Fauci said. So you could lose your medical license or be fired from your job at a hospital if you prescribed ivermectin for somebody, you know. So that's the kind of stuff we saw going on. And that's just plain old tyranny. And there's a lot more, I think, behind the scenes reasons for why all that happened. But no, we just can't let that happen again, ever.
Well, and I think so many people today have become so disengaged and so disconnected since all that went on, because I would say 60-70% of people, Randy, I think we've had this conversation before, just basically did what they were told. Did what they were told by the media. Yeah. Did what they were told by their workers, by their place of employment, by their church, hospital. You can't be seen or you can't have a procedure unless you're vaccinated. So I think that was a condition experiment just to see what they could tell people to do. And I think people have just gotten so disgusted and just frustrated with everything that they're just so in the dark now that's why I think a lot of these corrupt politicians are able to get away and do what they're doing, because they know that people are looking the other way and they're just heads down trying to make a living. What do you think, Randy?
Oh, I agree with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that just what happened during COVID was, and that gets back to this whole issue of knowing our Constitution, understanding where our freedoms come from, because the reason people allowed that to happen is because they didn't understand that their freedoms were being violated.
There you go.
All it took was a little bit of fear, and they're willing to give up their freedoms. And so that's what we're dealing with in our culture, is dumbing down our culture and then throw a bunch of fear on people, and then suddenly they'll give up their freedoms, just for either by fear or to have a little bit of peace or
and they did it.
Yeah, they did it.
Brad, I'm going to switch gears just a little bit, because I got to thinking, if I didn't ask this, I would punish myself. What is your stance on election integrity, and what is the situation in Iowa as in regard to opinions and use of electronic election voting devices as opposed to hand counting?
Well, I believe we need to get back to a much simpler system. I would be an advocate for paper ballots and human counting.
Oh, there we go.
And doing that on a local level. I think anytime you put these things, even counting machines can be used and to misdirect the counting if impossible. I'm not saying that we have a bad problem with that, but there is a serious mistrust in our culture right now when it comes to election integrity. It's across the board. So I think the more we get people involved and do human counting on a local level, and then everybody reports their numbers. I mean, there's always a chance for some mistakes, but boy, there's a lot less chance for fraud when you do it that way. I think that's important. I mean, I am a supporter of President Trump. I was the only legislator in this race, or not legislator, but the only candidate in this race who endorsed him. None of the others did. They like to talk and act like they did sometimes now, but I'm the only one that did. And I was the first legislator in 2024 to endorse him. And there's lots of reasons. And he does make me cringe once in a while, some of the things he says.
Definitely.
but the first thought that came to my mind was that, how can you say that you believe in election integrity if you're willing to sweep a rigged election under the rug? And I believe 2020 was rigged without any question about it. And so so here's a guy that should rightly be the president, but I'm going to go endorse somebody else. Well, then don't tell me. How can I say I'm for election integrity if I do that? You can't just sweep that whole issue under the rug and move on. So, but I do believe in simplifying that. I think the mail-in voting needs to be severely restricted. I think legitimate mail-in ballots, legitimate absentee ballots are a good thing. People overseas, people who, are homebound or infirmed or, invalids, that's one thing. But just across the board, we have some candidates that mail out. They've got tons of money and they mail out absentee ballot applications to the entire list with their literature. And this is, it's just not a fair election that way.
Well, and I'll just tell you, we've seen enough evidence over the last 4 years, people on our show, we went to election seminars, we've seen people break into the machines. There is no safe machine out there that they can be compromised through hardware, software, whatever it is. The best bet is to go to a hand count process.
Well, we've seen some of the nation's top hackers do it like right there in front of us. And it's just like, did I just see what I think I just saw? I mean, it's mind-boggling what people can do to get into these machines and how insecure. Remember he talked about how they weren't locked down near to the level they should have been.
Right.
It's amazing.
Intentionally left unsecured.
This is on both sides. I don't care. Oh, I know. Republican, Democrat, whatever. It's not a party issue.
I sat through a 4-hour seminar with a guy by the name of Douglas Frank. I don't know if that's...
Oh, yeah. Dr. Frank. Yeah, we've met him.
Yeah. Well, I sat through his seminar. It was 4 hours, and then there was an hour's worth before that one started. Yeah. So maybe it's more like 5 hours. But his evidence is pretty convincing.
You bet it is.
About what's going on. And so he told the story about how he walked into a place where the counting machines were, or the voting machines or whatever. And he said, asked them, are these machines connected to the internet? And they said, oh no, these are not connected. And so he said, well, I've got a little device here, and maybe it wasn't true, but he said, this will detect if it's communicating with the internet. So I'd like to come in and check them. Cause you know, maybe you don't even know that if they are, and the people wouldn't let him in, you know? So
I bet $10 that was Mike Lindell's device.
Oh, could have been.
Yeah.
Sure. That's where we met him, at Mike Lindell's Integrity Summit.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, and then, of course, he gave us his information, and it was sponsored by a canvassing organization, and they actually go through the roles, and they'll find anomalies like, you know, 8 people at 1 address, and they'll go knock on that door. And then so that's how they verify it. And so they've done a lot of work to verify that there is cheating going on, and they've removed hundreds of names from the lists. And so this is a scam. This is something that's been going on. And I think the whole voter thing was an opportunity for cheating, because you got all these people that as soon as they just everybody renews their driver's license, right? So then as soon as you renew your driver's license, you automatically get registered to vote at the same time. That was a big movement that a lot of states did. And the result of that was that now they have this huge list of people, and they can track them to see if they vote. So they go through that list, and they can glean thousands of names of people who never vote. And now they can use those names to create ballots for those names. And I think that's a lot of what happened in 2020. And somebody was doing that.
There were so many different avenues to rigging that. I mean, that's just one of probably about 400 different types of things. I mean, and we're finding out that a lot of it was rigged through Venezuela and other countries too. So we had domestic and international rigging going on. Mm-hmm. So,
Mark, your website is shermanforiowa.com. What can people find when they go over there?
Well, you can find, it's the issues. You can reach out to us and, send an email or get on our mailing list there. You can also make donations there. You know, we're still in this race. We got 2 weeks to go. So we're scraping up every penny we can to put on advertising. And, but then there's issues, endorsements, links to the different interviews and discussions we've had. Lots of information there. One of the issues that we've been dealing with was the issue of fighting the satanic altar that a group called the Satanic Temple put into our Capitol. So I was a lead voice in 2023, fighting that. And so there's that page you're flipping up right there will show you a link at the bottom there where you can read the articles I wrote. And the bill that I drafted to ban these things, I made a constitutional argument for it. I don't think the First Amendment was ever intended to give Satan equal status with God. God is woven into our founding documents and into our nation's history, and Satan has always been considered the enemy of God. So anyway, lots of information there.
Brad, we'd like to give you one last piece of give us one last piece of advice here today as we close out the show.
Well, you know, I've been a pastor for 45 years and that's not the only thing I've done, but that does give you a broad range of experience working with people from every walk of life. So that's a broad range, but I've done lots of everything, lots of other things as well. But from that perspective, I would say we have to ask God's help to restore our nation. And this nation was dedicated to God. When the people came to this continent, they came seeking religious freedom. I think that's in the roots of who we are as a people and this nation. So we will do everything we can to do the right thing. But anybody who thinks that they can fix the problems that we have in this world without God's help is sadly mistaken.
Yes.
And so I would say to people that we have to work like it depends on us, pray like it depends on God, because both are true. There's a dynamic there that God has always chosen to work through people. But he can do amazing things when we surrender our lives to him and say, okay, God, let's get this. Let's do this. We need your help.
Amen to that. Well, Brad, it's been great having you on here today. Yeah, Randy, he seems like he's well-grounded, got some common sense, and we need people like that who are political outsiders running these states. What do you think?
I totally agree. I mean, I like the political outsider.
I love that. That
we don't need any political insiders.
That's right. Brad, best of luck to you. Prayers to you and your family and your team as you continue this journey. And hope to see you as the next governor of Iowa, my friend.
Well, thank you very much. I've really enjoyed talking with you guys. I mean, this is one of the most fun I've had on a podcast in the entire campaign. So.
Well, again, it's shermanforiowa.com, S-H-E-R-M-A-N for Iowa.com. Go there, check out what Brad has to say, and let's get this guy going. Guys, thanks for watching. We'll see you on the next episode. Take care.
Thank you.
Noble Gold is there to help all of our viewers and listeners in this crazy economic time, especially in the upcoming of the silver market. All you need to do is run over there to noblegoldinvestments.com/grit and get your free wealth protection kit now. So we like to be really transparent here on Patriots with Grit. And one thing we want you to know is Randy and I are not financial advisors, nor do we play them on TV, do we, Randy? So we highly recommend you get with a financial advisor before making any investments in your precious metals.
One thing's for certain, things are changing. Get prepared. You don't want to miss out because this is an extreme opportunity in the silver market. Just go to noblegoldinvestments.com/grit. Don't miss out.